Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Edition. I'm your host, Zachariah Hughes. Today we're discussing the race for mayor in Alaska's largest city. Anchorage's politics ripple across the state, whether in terms of funding coming out of the legislature or launching political careers to higher office. The election is on April 7th, but recently we've seen the race start to take off. It's a crowded field with 11 candidates, hundreds of thousands of dollars pouring in from donations, and expectations of an eventual runoff. With us in the studio are two Anchorage reporters covering the mayor's race. Devin Kelly is a city reporter for the Alaska Dispatch News and reports regularly on the assembly and municipal issues. Devin, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're also joined by Austin Baird, a political reporter for KTUU Channel 2, who has interviewed everyone in this year's mayoral field. Welcome, Austin. And I want to start by asking you to describe how this year's field compares to past years.
Sure. As you said, it's a wide field. A lot of people are vying to take Dan Sullivan's job, who's out, of course, because of term limits. You have, a dozen or more candidates, depending how you count it, 11 that'll be on the ballot, and a few others that registered with the Alaska Public Offices Commission. And you do have a certain group that's kind of risen to the top in terms of financial support and the attention their campaigns are getting. The main candidates, if you want to jump ahead to that, I guess would be Ethan Berkowitz, Dan Coffey, Amy Dymbosky, and Andrew Halcrow. And the way I guess you get it, labeling them as the main candidates would be looking at how much financial support they've attracted, and also their past electoral history and things like that. So that's kind of the field that's coming together.
And would you just describe, you'd mentioned dollars raised, but what are some of the other ways that you're evaluating front runner? If I can use that term.
Sure. I think if you look specifically beyond just the actual dollar amount raised, if you look at the groups that support is coming from, if you're looking at, for example, Dan Coffey has about $10,000 raised from GCI employees and has a lot of support from other businesses that are very strong within the community. He also has support from Mark Pfeffer, developer. And just looking at groups like that, Dymbosky has some local business support and also donations from Senator Bill Stoltz and Representative Mia Costello. So it's kind of looking at who supports them more than the actual dollar amount, because Coffey's out to a big lead, kind of understandably, because he's been campaigning for 17 months, longer than anyone now. So.
And Devin, turning to you, where do these front runners or this head of the pack, where do they fall on the political spectrum? Or is that the wrong question to be asking in a local race?
Yeah, we want to be careful about classifying candidates as liberal or conservative. The race, technically speaking, is nonpartisan, so you're not going to see Democrat or Republican show up on the ballot when people go to vote. That being said, Amy Dymbosky in particular has made a point of pitching herself as the most conservative candidate, and I don't think anyone would really argue with that in terms of, she talks a lot about limited government, less taxation, and then has conservative stances on things like abortion, same-sex marriage. So I think that Amy is one you can, she has tried to make that an issue. How conservative is she relative to the other candidates?
And the other three, any of them touting bona fides for any party affiliation or any ideological affiliation?
Yeah, well, there's two among the other three who we consider front runners, Dan Coffey, Andrew Halcrow, Ethan Berkowitz. Coffey and Halcrow are both registered Republicans. Coffey became a registered Republican in January, actually, after having a nonpartisan affiliation for several decades. And he had said that that was in order to, he'd said that it made it easier for Republicans to support him. I think that there was some wavering support maybe on the party establishment there. Halcrow, also a registered Republican, and has shown himself, though, he's been maybe a little more moderate on other issues. And then Berkowitz is a registered Democrat. So, yeah.
And what role do the political parties play here? Is it just a perception thing, or can we look to tangible support coming out of the party apparatuses in town?
Yeah, it's You know, I think that party affiliation gives people essentially a signpost for what is this person's values, what are they going to be talking about, and perhaps people are more inclined to support someone if they know that their party affiliation is Republican or Democrat. Again, nonpartisan election, but certainly there's people from certain parties that have donated to certain candidates, and there are people who previously were working for certain candidates in past races that were partisan and are now coming into the picture here.
Well, I want to come back to that later on about who's helping run these campaigns, but Austin, just turning to you for a second, tell me about the background for a lot of these candidates, either the top four and then anyone else.
Sure. So if you look at, for example, Dan Coffey, he's a former assembly member. He's been in Alaska most of his life. He's run businesses. He's been a lawyer. Amy Domboski, of course, she's currently on the assembly and has also been in Eagle River for most of her life, the district she represents, the assembly. Andrew Halcrow, he's a former state representative and was recently the Chamber of Commerce director, and has also been involved with his family's businesses over the years. And Ethan Berkowitz, another former state representative, candidate for statewide office, and has been in the community for a long time. Separate from that, you have a very broad group of people, many backgrounds. Lance Ahern, he is the chief information officer for the municipality. Paul Bauer, he's a former assembly member, served a term on the assembly 6 or 8 years ago. And then on down the list, all types have signed up to run for mayor of Anchorage, including stagehand, some various union members, former Brother Francis outreach coordinator, all types really. So,
and for the people you've spoken with, and it's a pretty comprehensive list. It's not everyone I understand, but most of the people that are running. What have the big issues been that they've brought up and wanted to talk about, and really are looking to run on?
Sure. I think everyone has some variation of a pitch saying, I'm the best to deal with public safety and I'm the best to deal with a tight budget. And that's really kind of the mantra. And then when you get into the details where you can really see, like, what do people believe? For example, we asked about what do candidates think about sales tax. And that's one area where you see some diversion among the main candidates and then also among the field more broadly. Dan Coffey says no, absolutely not to sales tax. Andrew Halcrow is a lot closer to supporting a sales tax, although he didn't say yes, but he did say we should seriously consider it. Amy Domboski said only if it's passed by 60% of voters, which is the requirement for that type of a change. And Berkowitz didn't really take a firm position on it and said it was premature. So that's an area you see a lot of differences of opinion with marijuana and some other issues like that also. So,
Devin, from the conversations you've had, is there a lot of overlap in the policy positions and the recommendations that candidates are putting forward, or are they really not looking yet to solutions?
Well, I would say that topically, the candidates seem to be talking about a lot of the same things separately of each other, saying these are the things I'm going to be focusing on. And as Austin said, public safety, Juno, and the state budget, education. I would say that those are the big, those are just topically the big things. And then there still remains to be a lot of fleshing out, I think, among these candidates for what their specific positions are and what their specific plans are. We're just getting into forum season, and we're going to start hearing, I think, a lot more on how they differ on these topics and these types of big issues in the next month.
You had a piece of reportage last week on the financial landscape of the campaign so far. Whose war chest is the biggest at this point? Does it matter this many weeks away from the election? And where is the money coming from so far?
Yeah, and I should say that right now the numbers that we have, the candidates have filed with the Alaska Public Offices Commission for what they've raised, and those numbers are as of February 2nd. So we are actually about a month out. There's been a month of activity that isn't documented in those reports. Why do we care about those reports? We care, and why do we care about who's raising money? It's because that indicates who is going to be able to afford advertising messaging, consulting services. So that's why we pay attention to these things. By far, the biggest war chest, if you will, is Dan Coffey. He's raised more than $220,000 in the 16 months he's been campaigning, and he has a little over $100,000 cash on hand, and this was as of February 2nd. So he's raised quite a lot of money. Amy Dombosky, the other candidate that she'd been campaigning since August at the time that the reports were due, and she had raised about $50,000, so about a fifth of what he had raised total. And it's interesting about her, about $30,000 of that was her own money. It was money that she and her family had been talking about, this is what she told me, putting down for a lot on for a new house, and they decided not to do that and spend the money on the election instead. And then Hal Crow had only been in the race about 2 weeks by the time that those reports were due, so there is going to be, again, Berkowitz hadn't even submitted. So the front runners, when the next report is due on March 9th, we're going to be seeing a lot of interesting things, I think, in terms of where the field is going to be shaking out in terms of fundraising.
Let me just pause there. I mean, mm-hmm. Austin, do you know, relative to years past, how does this compare with the amount of money in play? Certainly much smaller than the primary elections that we were seeing in the national races and state. But, you know, from the 2012 campaigns, the 2009 campaigns, do you have a sense of whether this money matters or if this is chump change?
You know, what I didn't do is go back and look at the numbers that were raised from the first month or so of when candidates have actually declared. And I think that would be the best sample. So I couldn't really speak to that. But I think on March 9th, when you have the deadline for the 30-day report, that's when you'll really see has Berkowitz been able to fundraise effectively and get neck to neck with Coffey? How is Hal Crow and Amy Dombosky, how are they holding up? And have any other candidates surged and found support from businesses or unions or groups like that? So.
And Zach, you're asking where is the money coming from? That's a good question. In terms of these APOC reports, there's two different places the money's coming from. One is from individuals, the other is from political action committees, so PACs. And they are, state law limits those two groups from, you can only donate $500 to each candidate per year. And Coffey, again, because he's got the longest list of people who's contributed, if you're looking at him, there's at least one PAC that's donated to him, or there's actually two PACs, but one consists of NSTAR employees. Also, just going down the list, there's people who are affiliated with the liquor industry, bar owners, people involved with distribution, and then a lot of GCI employees have donated, as I think Austin said earlier, Bill Sheffield, former governor, and even Andrew Halcrow's dad donated before Hal Crow, his son, jumped into the race. And then Dombosky.
And not to Hal Crow, he donated to Coffey.
To Coffey, so, yeah, we should make that clear. Yeah, Bob Hal Crow, who's Avis executive, donated to Coffey. And then a few months later, his son jumped in, so presumably he's donated to him now. And then Dombosky, she has support from people like Glenn Beagle. He's a talk show host in town. So yeah, it's helpful to look at who's donating, and you can get an idea of the support. The size of the donations matters. If you see more $10, $5, $25 donations, it might indicate a little more grassroots support as opposed to the $100, $500 donations. So that's also something to keep an eye on.
Well, and in terms of support, I do want to ask you, are there business associations or union endorsements that matter that we should be looking for in the next few weeks? And then in terms of votes, where are really the strongholds for places that candidates may be launching a ground game, if to the extent that that's an applicable term in a local race, but which parts of the city should we be looking at for assessing support?
Right. Coffey has been talking to a lot of people the last 16 months. He's had a lot of meetings. He's really reaching out in a lot of different directions. So I think from him, it looks like it's more of a variety shaping up just because of how he's been active in terms of meeting with people. In Amy Dombosky, again, she's been campaigning for about 5 months. It's a little easier to speak about the people who've been campaigning the longest, of course. But in Amy's case, she is a first-term assessor. assemblywoman from Chugiak, Eagle River, and I think that is where some of her base will lie. I know that she is also hoping to gather votes from South Anchorage, which also tends to vote a little more conservative. So that's going to be, I think, the base of where she's drawing support. And I think with Halkerone and Berkowitz, it remains to be seen. Berkowitz has had support from union groups in the past, like in past elections he's run, so that's something maybe to watch out for with this election. As far as endorsements go, I think that union, those types of endorsements are always watched. The education union, the Union of Teachers, the AFL-CIO, those are groups that, you know, the endorsements you might want to look out for in the future. Mm-hmm. And then there's just going to be, again, in the next month, we're going to be hearing about a lot of different business groups that, yeah, we'll have.
And Austin, just going back to you, you've spoken to so many people, and I'm wondering if any issues have emerged as contentious. Is there anything divisive that there's really a lot of splitting off even this early out?
Yeah, I mean, the sales tax issue is one that I mentioned. There have also been very, very sharp differences of opinion in terms of how to interact with city unions and collective bargaining. And just basically, that's an area where you can really see differences in the candidates. There are also a lot of differences in the opinion of how the city should regulate marijuana. A couple candidates, including Halkro and Domboski, called for packaging restrictions, labeling requirements, and also very sharp restrictions on where sales could take place in the city. Berkowitz didn't exactly get specific with it, but said it should be regulated similar to alcohol. And Coffey says that he's concerned, but also didn't really get too specific in terms of what he wants to see, and kind of waiting to see what the state does with the second and third bills that will be passed related to marijuana commercialization over the next few months. So those are some of them. But yeah.
And Devin, anything to add? Anything that you're seeing? You know, I know from conversations I've had that public safety has been front and center of interview discussion. Housing is certainly an issue, development priorities moving forwards, and then revenues. But that often is kind of a diagnosis before people start maybe getting specific with things. And I'm curious if you've seen any kind of really points of divergence with the conversations you've had on what people are looking to for how they want to take over.
I think that I haven't heard as many specifics up until now. I think, again, as we start to get into where these candidates are facing off, like in a room together, mm-hmm. That's when we're going to start to be able to see the most stark differences. And, you know, on questions, but I can tell you they're all going to go into it saying, no one's going to be saying we should be spending more money or we should be spending more than we have. Like, no one's going to be saying that. So it's just how do we do that when we're talking about, diversifying our tax base when we're talking about revenue streams. So I think that, no, I haven't heard yet. Like, I think that's all going to be shaping up in the next month or so, like where people really have different.
Some other areas of, I guess, not as glaring, but still some disagreement would be on the Kinnick Arm crossing. How should that project play out? Should it play out at all? Some candidates say absolutely not. Others are more moderate and say, you know, more careful and saying, well, I'll think about it and figure it out in the future. Not exactly taking a position. Another issue aside from Kibata that you can see some differences on is looking also at how the city should be dealing with the budget gap. Should city workers be cut? That's one issue that I think will be pretty big, and that plays into how does the city collect its revenue and what does the state do? And it's tough. It's really tough to say. To say exactly what will happen with that, but that's another point of divergence, definitely. Mm.
And for either one of you, I don't know if one of you has an answer on the top of your head, but we've been clustering our conversation around these four candidates, but in the whole field, is there anyone that surprised you, whether from the breadth of the issues they're willing to take on or for any reasons?
Well, I mean, just in general, I was surprised to see Lance Ahern's name on the list. I do cover the municipality, and I knew him prior as the chief information officer. And he has been very deeply associated with the SAP implementation, which has not gone very well the past couple of years. So I was surprised to see his name. It's just an interesting time to be running. They, you know, just today we learned that the city is preparing to spend another about $8.5 million on the project through the end of September. So there's just a lot going on there. They're trying to revitalize it. So anyway, so it was interesting to see Lance's name. You know, one of the first things he did was put out a document about how he sees the SAP project and how he wanting to explain what happened with it. So that'll just be kind of maybe, you know, as someone who has been following that project, that'll be just an interesting thing to listen to him talk about.
Yeah, and with him, he's certainly not someone who you would have predicted jumping into elected politics, but does have interesting background with the city and with other tech roles, and talked a lot about like different things the city could do from day one, kind of specifically redundancies that could be removed and things like that. And separately, I guess some of the other candidates for me that would jump out. Some people like him and like Paul Bauer are very, very serious candidates. And then you also see a lot of people who have a single issue that is primarily all that they care about. Jonathan James Harrison is one. He filed for with the Alaska Public Offices Commission, but not with Municipality Quirk. So he can raise money, but he won't be on the ballot. But he's one who talked about tidal wave energy. That was essentially all that he talked about. Separately, Dustin Darden, he's talked a lot about abortion and issues like that, but hasn't necessarily broadened out with the level of detail as some of the other candidates that have jumped into the race. So those are two that would stand out for me. Mm.
And who do these campaigns have working for them? I mean, in terms of the people on the ground running their staffs and running their ground game, are we seeing a lot of holdover from people who were here for the primaries in November that have stuck around?
We're seeing some of that, yeah. Berkowitz's campaign, his campaign manager, Suzanne Fleet Green, was previously Mark Begich's campaign manager. He has some other people who worked for Begich working for him. Amy Domboski has some people who worked for Treadwell, Mead Treadwell, in his campaign to be the next U.S. senator. So, those two are the main ones that I see, maybe more from the other old campaigns. In terms of Andrew Halcrow, his campaign manager is his nephew. So, and that's what we're kind of seeing. That's what I would say. Mm-hmm.
And this is a question for either one of you, but what of the issues that you cover in your beats and just generally reporting on the city of Anchorage, on the municipality, do you think is an issue that's really not worked its way into the campaign? What's not getting enough attention in your opinions?
I wouldn't say necessarily a specific issue, but I think one thing that we haven't gotten to, and I think it's kind of the natural next step in terms of reporting this kind of a race, is what specifically can the mayor of Anchorage do and how would you do it? That's kind of the next step in terms of reporting this, because there's a lot of talk about issues that really are generic, broad, and don't really get to what a candidate believes. And it's kind of just nailing down on specifically, okay, which city workers would you consider cutting? Okay, what are you going to do for public transportation specifically? Are you going to eliminate routes? Are you going to add routes? What are you going to do? It's that level of not necessarily sexy headlines or like great TV stories, but it's that type of getting more detailed information on specifics instead of just the broad talking points. So. Mm.
Yeah, and I agree wholeheartedly with that. I think that it will be interesting to see if candidates roll out much more specific plans for how they plan to address the issues that they're talking about. How are you going to go to Juneau and, you know, protect Anchorage against a possible loss of state funds that come to the city? You know, what is your plan for doing that, and to what extent can you make a difference? The candidates are talking a lot about education, but to what extent can the mayor influence education? You know, it'd be interesting to hear some specifics about that, because certainly a lot of parents and families are going to be listening to that message, so it will be good to hear some details about that as well. Mm.
And we don't have a ton of time for Shop Talk, but I am curious to hear from both of you what role you think media plays in shaping the election, whether that's in terms of crafting a probable field or in repeating messages in advertising. I mean, what do your newsrooms do, and what's the relationship like with the campaign itself?
For us, I think the initial approach, looking at the Q&A and questionnaire series we did, is just introducing people first and introducing everyone, and letting everyone who's filed have a chance to put their name out there and establish positions and differences and get all of that as exhaustively on the record as possible. And beyond that, I think the role is taking a look at the candidates who have the most experience and the most support and people who can distinguish themselves. And when you do have such a wide field of candidates, you can't necessarily spend a week reporting on one person's background, let alone everyone's background. So that's I guess the challenge is just figuring out how to make it so we give everyone a fair chance to get their name in the mix, and then move on and look at the people who have really established themselves as serious candidates.
And we are also doing a questionnaire, which is going to be forthcoming, and then also focusing on the candidates that are attracting the most support and talking a little more about their backgrounds, because that seems, you know, important and relevant if these folks are going to be serious contenders for the office. I think, though, generally, I mean, every single year, media gets more sophisticated with respect to things like social media, the ways that you can reach people. And in this campaign, all of the main candidates have Facebook pages. They're doing promoted posts. There's just, like, a lot of activity in that arena. And so I think that's going to definitely, we're going to watch that play a role. Like, how are they able to reach people through more of the new media, you know, sort of campaigning methods that have just every year, again, get a little bit more sophisticated.
And who shows up at their events? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, events like Coffee with Coffee, like that's going out on Facebook all the time. Are people actually showing up? That'll be fun to drop in and see if it's... you know, a candidate, their wife, their kids, or if it's actually a group of people who have showed up to listen.
Well, that's all the time we have on Alaska Edition. I'd like to thank both of my guests for taking time away from their busy newsrooms to be with us for discussing the ongoing race for mayor in Anchorage. Austin Baird, political reporter for KTUU, and Devin Kelly of the Alaska Dispatch News. Thank you both for joining us, and thank you at home for joining us as well. I'm Zachariah Hughes.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.